It's December 24th, 2017, and Harry is 2 months out from taking one of the biggest steps of his life. He's engaged and on the road to getting hitched. And now he's invited his fiancée, Meghan Markle, to spend Christmas with him and his family. Now, this might not seem like such a big deal, unless you're a family member of the royals. Harry has had 12 official girlfriends, and he's asked exactly none of them to spend Christmas with the Queen. Until now. There are a lot of traditions Meghan will be expected to follow, which won't exactly be second nature because Meghan never followed the royals. Well, except Diana. And being she's an American, it's a crapshoot if she'll even know what figgy pudding is. So the show begins on Christmas Eve at Sandringham. That's the Queen's country retreat about 100 miles north of London. But it's not your usual country retreat.
Does that mean it doesn't have a red barn and hundreds of livestock?
I mean, you're close. It's a huge red brick mansion sitting on 20,000 acres of land. It takes more than 200 workers just to keep the place up and running. Yet it's somehow still considered small by royal standards. Anyway, back to Christmas Eve. Everyone in the royal family has a different check-in time. Youngest first, oldest last. And the first thing they do, of course, is have a drink. Then, once everyone's good and liquored up, they challenge the staff to a soccer game. We don't know who wins, but we do know the royals are good losers. I mean, after all, they did give up their empire.
Wow, shots fired.
So after the game, they decorate the tree, and after that, it's time for dinner. A really fancy dinner. The guys are in tuxes, the women are in gowns. The queen drinks a Zaza, which is Dubonnet and gin. I don't know why I'm so fascinated by the queen's drinking habits. It just seems so incongruous or something.
I mean, now I've got to try a Zaza on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. After drinks, everyone tucks into a 6-course meal served by candlelight, and the menu is in French.
Pass the bangers and mash, s'il vous plaît.
You know, this seems like the perfect time to mention that there was another woman who attended the royal Christmas before Meghan, and she didn't actually like it very much. Princess Diana. Diana spent the early years of her childhood living in a mansion on the grounds of Sandringham. This was in the 60s. And her parents used to drag her, kicking and screaming, over to the Queen's house to watch Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh my gosh, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I love that movie.
I know you do. But there's still more Christmas tradition to come with Meghan and Harry. Christmas morning begins with a visit to the local church. And after church, the Queen changes her outfit. She does that 5 to 7 times on Christmas. Then everyone tucks into a light lunch of lobster salad, roast turkey, and pudding spiked with brandy butter.
Sounds good, but when do they open presents?
Okay, check out this self-control. They don't open their gifts until after their afternoon tea. The royals are supposedly all about gag gifts. One year, Charles got a leather toilet seat. And then another year, Kate gave Harry a grow-your-own-girlfriend kit. And here's my personal favorite. Harry once gave his grandmother a shower cap that said, "Ain't life a bitch."
Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I'm following everything, to fit in, Meghan needs to be good at soccer, know French, not want to throw up at the thought of mixing lobster with turkey, and have a biting sense of humor?
Yes. And according to Harry, she killed it. A few days after Christmas, he went on BBC Radio 4 to tell his subjects how it all went.
It was your future wife's first Christmas with the in-laws. How was it?
Oh, it was fantastic. She really enjoyed it. The family loved having her there.
But Harry's fawning has a bad ending.
She's done an absolutely amazing job just, you know, getting in there. And it's, you know, it's the family that I suppose she's never had.
What's so bad about that? He sounds sweet.
Well, the problem is she has an actual family and they are not happy. Here's Meghan's half-sister in a Channel 5 documentary talking about how she felt when she heard it.
The first thing I thought was, I don't think Harry's been given the full story. Something's not right. Although we weren't the classic large family together every holiday, we were family. And then the question was, why? Like, why would you be embarrassed about your family?
Okay, so Samantha kind of goes from, why would Harry say that, to, I can't believe my sister thinks that.
Yeah. And while it's true that Samantha was never super close with Meghan, her feelings are still hurt. She doesn't like being publicly dissed. And she's about to lash out.
We'll be right back.
From Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, Meghan Markle went on a blind date with Destiny. And by Destiny, I mean Prince Harry. But things aren't easy for these new lovebirds. Not when the press is hell-bent on humiliating you.
But she still managed to get her man, charm his grandma,
aka Queen Elizabeth II.
Right. And make the whole world fall in love with her.
Well, we fell for her anyway.
Now that her wedding is right around the corner, what could possibly go wrong?
Everything. This is episode 2, Meet the Markles. That's the champagne. Arisha, what's the first thing you do when you're getting married?
Plan the honeymoon.
No, you send out the invitations. Harry and Meghan launched theirs on March 22nd, 2018, almost 4 months from the time they got engaged and 58 days before their wedding.
That's cutting it a little close.
Yeah, I thought that too, but then I was like, who's gonna say no? They could have sent out the invites the night before and everyone would be like, yeah, I'll be there. The invites are printed at the royal family's favorite print shop. And how cute is this? They have American ink printed on English cardstock. Here, read one.
His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales.
No, 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 wait. Do that English accent everyone hates.
Ouch. His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales, requests the pleasure of your company at the marriage of His Royal Highness, Prince Harry of Wales and Miss Meghan Markle at St. George's Chapel, Windsor Castle, on Saturday, the 19th of May, 2018, at noon. Okay, at the bottom here, it has the dress code. Women can wear day dresses and hats. Men are allowed to wear uniforms, morning coats, or lounge suits. So my first question is, what's a lounge suit? Because it sounds a lot like pajamas. And I feel like I would have remembered if anyone had worn pajamas to the royal wedding.
God, wouldn't that have been great? You know those TV commentators who analyze every outfit?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can just hear them being like, and here's David Beckham looking dashing in a pair of blue satin PJs with what looks to be a cloud pattern. But alas, it's just a fancy way of saying a regular men's suit.
Okay, and then what's the deal with all of the hats?
It's actually pretty typical in English society. It's so common, you don't even need to add it to your wedding invite. But Meghan and Harry invited a lot of Americans to the wedding, and they don't want them to be embarrassed when they show up without hats. Guests like Serena and Oprah.
Okay, if Serena and Oprah don't want to wear hats, then Serena and Oprah shouldn't have to wear hats.
Well, spoiler alert, they're gonna wear hats. And they're crazy cute, especially Serena's, which looks like a giant sculpted chiffon feather.
Definitely would wear that.
Yeah, same. But it's a pretty toned-down affair compared to some royal weddings. Harry and Meghan pick St. George's, which is a more intimate setting for their 600 guests.
Brooke, I don't think a wedding that has 600 guests can be called intimate.
Well, it's a gesture. As the family's biographer wrote, it's a signal to people that they're not going to be full-on attention-seeking royals. But just because Harry and Meghan want to keep it low-key doesn't mean they're going to skimp on the budget. The price tag for their big day is $45 million. But most of it went to security. They had snipers, sniffer dogs, and 3,000 cops. That cost $40 million.
Okay, so that leaves $5 million for the fun stuff. Okay, Brooke, give it to me from least to most ridiculous.
Okay, so the cake was $7,000.
Okay, that's a lot of frosting.
Well, it's a big cake, and it has 150 edible flowers on it, and those flowers don't pick themselves. Speaking of flowers, their floral arrangement set them back $100,000. What else? Oh, this is my favorite. They had a trumpet ensemble at the wedding, and Harry and Meghan bought the band members personalized silver-plated trumpets to the tune of $130,000. And last but not least, the dress. That set them back $500,000.
Okay, that's insane.
Yeah, so it was designed by Claire Keller from Givenchy. It was a white dress, elegant as hell. It had a 16-foot train that took 500 hours to embroider. And you know how you're supposed to have something blue on your wedding day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Meghan brought a small piece of the blue dress that she wore to her first date with Harry.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
Everything sounds just like a princess perfect wedding.
Yeah, except for one thing. Remember how I said Meghan and Harry sent their wedding invites to friends and family all over the world?
Yeah.
Well, not everyone in the family is on the list. April rolls around and still no invite for Meghan's half-sister Samantha. So she does what any angry sibling would do in this situation.
Oh my God, she beat her up?
No, she starts tweeting about it. Out of respect and humanitarianism, the Markles should be invited if complete strangers are. Our issue is not a matter of closeness. Family is family. Oh, and this one's my favorite. She tweets at Harry, "It's time to man up. Shout-outs about humanitarianism don't work when you're allowing Meg to ignore the Markles." The press loves Samantha's shade. They love being able to portray Meghan as a greedy, heartless snob who abandoned her family the moment she got famous. Piers Morgan has this to say about her.
I just think she's a slight social climber, I'm afraid.
They love it so much that they start paying Samantha $1,500 a pop for more stories. Here's an example of the kind of thing Samantha says about her sister. This is from Channel 5.
Like, you know, if you can afford $75,000 for a dress, you can afford $75,000 to help your dad.
In that respect, has she disappointed you a little bit?
Yeah, I think you need to step up to the plate and make sure he's well taken care of.
She's talking about Meghan's dad, Tom Markle. He's been keeping a really low profile. It's so low that for a while, the press can't even find him. Eventually, they track him down in a seaside town about a dozen miles south of Tijuana where Tom has fallen on hard times. He used to be a TV lighting designer, and he was good at it. He won an Emmy. But lately, he's been going through a rough patch. He's had to declare bankruptcy. He's got some health problems. And while Meghan's been thriving, he's been struggling, which has got to be hard for Meghan to watch since the two of them used to be pretty close. When she was in seventh grade, she had to fill out a form at school that made her tick a box for ethnicity, either white, black, Hispanic, or Asian. And Meghan wasn't sure what to do, so she asked her teacher. "Tick the box for white," her teacher told her, "because that's how you look." But Meghan, of course, couldn't do that. She wasn't just white and she wasn't just black. She was, as she later put it, a question mark. So she left the box blank. And then when she got home, she told her dad what had happened, and he said, "If that happens again, you draw your own box."
Hell yeah, you do. As someone who's had literally the exact same struggle, Tom is spot on. I always checked both boxes. Screw them.
Yeah. And Tom stayed involved. When Meghan grew up and struggled to launch her career, he put gas in her car so she could make it to auditions. They may not be super close anymore, but he's determined to not cause Meghan any trouble in the press. But all that changes when the press tracks him down. The paparazzi descend on Tom like water jets at a car wash. They follow him everywhere he goes, and they start publishing super unflattering pictures. There's one of him strolling around with a plastic bag full of beer, and in another, he's at Home Depot picking out a toilet.
Okay, how is that unflattering? We should be applauding this man for buying his own toilet. He's a man of the people. Do you think Prince Harry ever bought his own toilet?
Touche.
And you know the thing about royals and toilets?
Oh, God, you don't have to tell this story.
I do. Groom of the stool.
I love that this is your favorite royal family factoid.
I love it because it's just so ridiculous. And for our listeners who don't know, you're in for such a treat. There actually used to be someone in the royal court called the Groom of the Stool, whose sole job was to wipe the king's derriere.
Okay, we should point out, though, that this was back in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, but there were still grooms of the stool in the 20th century. It's crazy.
Okay, and 2 years ago, if you were a royal in-law-to-be, buying a toilet was front page news in the tabloids. Tom later said this on a Channel 5 documentary.
Every paper seemed to want to make me look like a dumb, fat slob. I bought a new toilet. It became news around the world, and I was made a joke that this was my throne.
Meghan's sister Samantha is now even more miffed than she was about the invite. No one makes her dad look like a buffoon. So she comes up with a plan to redeem his image, and Tom, of course, is all ears. She convinces her dad to hire a photographer to take better photos of him. Photos where he looks more like the father of a future duchess. There's one of Tom at an internet cafe Googling pictures of Harry and Meghan. There's another of him getting measured for his wedding lounge suit. And my very favorite, Tom shot through the window of a coffee shop flipping through a picture book called Images of Britain.
There's no way the press would fall for these.
Oh, but they do. One outlet pays $100,000 for the rights to the photos, which, of course, go viral. And all of a sudden, people were saying nice things about Tom. Right up until, and this is usually what happens as soon as people start saying nice things about you, all hell breaks loose.
The Mail on Sunday alleging that Thomas Markle participated in staged photos for the paparazzi.
And this morning we are learning that Meghan's estranged half-sister Samantha was behind it all. For Meghan Markle, this is just yet another embarrassing storyline about her family.
Harry and Meghan are understandably furious. Meghan calls her dad and rips him a new one. What were you thinking? Are you trying to ruin everything? Tom says he's sorry. He even offers to make a public apology, but Meghan thinks that'll probably just make it worse. If they want it to die down, then Tom should stay in Mexico and keep his mouth shut, which he manages to do for 4 whole days. But then he can't help himself. He's got a new story he wants to tell. Tom just had a heart attack.
No.
Well, maybe. There's stories going around that Tom faked his heart attack to get some good publicity.
You're kidding me.
Nope. Reporters call up the hospital where Tom claims he went for treatment, and there's no record of him ever being admitted. The wedding is only a week away at this point, and all anyone in the press wants to talk about is Meghan's family, which does not sit well with the Queen. She's quietly watched this saga unfold, hoping it would sort itself out. But now, she's had enough. And she can't sit by any longer while Tom embarrasses her grandson and his soon-to-be wife. So she sends a team of courtiers to help Meghan handle her family. But it turns out Meghan doesn't want the Queen's help. This is Meghan's family, and she'll handle them the way she wants. And the Queen isn't happy about that either. As one source close to the family told Vanity Fair, there was a lot of tension.
That sounds like one of those polite British ways of saying things are about to get ugly.
Yeah, and they do. Meghan's drawn her battle lines. She doesn't need any courtiers to tell her what to do. She has a plan of her own, and she's about to put it into action. Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. Yeah. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started. Before Meghan can put Operation Unite the Family into effect, reporter Piers Morgan makes a shocking announcement on Good Morning Britain.
Well, following the latest dramatic twist in the royal wedding saga, it's looking almost certain that Meghan Markle's father will miss the ceremony.
So what was the plan?
Well, Meghan's main goal was to resolve the issue with her dad without getting the press involved. And on May 16th, 2018, she's just as surprised as anyone to wake up to this news. Then Tom himself goes on TMZ to explain he was skipping the wedding because of the fallout over the staged photos. And the rest of the press is pretty bummed out that TMZ got the scoop.
We've made a reference to the TMZ website all morning.
Correct.
And the fact that it seems to be the only news site, or in fact, the only communications person that Thomas Markle is in touch with.
He waffles so much, he might as well be Belgian. The next day, he tells TMZ it was just a false alarm. He says Meghan sent him some nice texts, so he's back in. Then a few hours later, he changes his tune again. He's out. He gives a few different reasons for his decision this time. A big one is the call he claims to have gotten from Prince Harry, who said, "If you had listened to me, this would have never happened to you. If you'd stayed in the house and kept the doors locked and never spoken to anyone, this wouldn't have happened."
I guess I wouldn't feel welcome at the wedding after all that either.
Yeah, and now Tom goes on the defensive. He shoots back, it's too bad I didn't die because you both could pretend that you're sad.
Oof, low blow.
Yeah. Tom's other reasons for waffling are medical. Tom tells TMZ he's having chest pain thanks to his daughter, Samantha. He says he's been popping Valium and needs to check himself into the hospital.
There's no way this is how Meghan wanted things to go down.
No, and it's definitely not how the Queen wanted it to go down either. I don't think the Queen would ever put it like this, but you know she's got to be thinking, this shit has got to stop.
And does it?
It does, finally. 2 days before the wedding, Meghan makes her own announcement. She tells the press that her dad won't be coming to the wedding, and that's that. But it's not the end of the drama. Meghan's horrified to discover that St. George's, the 15th century chapel where she's getting married, smells musty.
That doesn't sound all that dramatic.
Well, the drama happens when she asks the Queen's staff to douse the place in air freshener. The staff are like, monarchs have worshipped here for more than 500 years. If it smells good enough for the Queen, then it's good enough for you. Queen one, Meghan zero. And then, without consulting the Queen, Meghan picks out an emerald tiara to wear to the wedding, which isn't how it works. The Queen is supposed to pick it out. Someone on the staff pulls Harry aside and tells him that the tiara Meghan chose is unacceptable. Harry has to pick a side, so he does. He tells the staff member, what Meghan wants, Meghan gets. Rumors of the exchange get back to the Queen, and as you can imagine, she's not happy, and she summons him to come and see her. The Queen and Harry used to be really close, but their bond has been fraying. That's largely due to the fact that Harry totally cut her out of the wedding planning. Like, instead of using the Queen's florist, Harry and Meghan found their own. And then, instead of trusting the Queen's kitchen, they hired an American cake maker. They even reached out to the Archbishop of Canterbury about performing their ceremony without getting the Queen's permission first, a major breach of protocol. When the Queen summons Harry, she tells him that Meghan cannot have whatever she wants. She gets what tiara she's given by me. So, Meghan will be wearing the tiara the Queen chooses. Queen two, Meghan zero. The Queen's parting command to Harry is to keep Meghan in check.
Wow. Game, set, match.
Yeah. His bride may be an independent American woman, but she's not in America anymore.
Or independent.
Yeah. On May 18th, 2018, the day before the wedding, Harry slips into the private garden at Kensington Palace to pick a few flowers for Meghan to carry at the wedding. He chooses forget-me-nots, his mother's favorite. She's been on his mind lately. He and William just released a documentary about Princess Diana, where Harry opened up about her life and the wound of her loss.
She was just the best mother ever. She would just engulf you and squeeze you as tight as possible. I miss that. I miss that feeling. I miss that part of a family. I miss having that mother to be able to give you those hugs and give you that compassion that I think everybody needs.
What do you think Princess Diana would have thought of Meghan?
I think she would have liked her. I mean, Diana was a British aristocrat, but she never liked royal conventions. Like, get this. When William and Harry were boys, she used to sneak them out of the palace to eat at McDonald's.
I've got two Happy Meals for the princes?
So would she have approved of Harry for following his heart, finding an independent woman and ruffling a few royal feathers? I think definitely.
I guess the better question is, would she have warned Harry and Meghan? Would she have said, don't do this?
I mean, she wouldn't have said it like a creepy ghost, but we'll never know.
Meghan Markle, the bride, is wearing her hair up. The veil is being caught in the May sunshine.
Stunning.
A wave for the crowds. An utterly exquisite dress.
And on the morning of May 19th, 2018, after all that drama, the $45 million day finally arrives. This is a clip of Meghan as she enters St. George's Chapel and makes her way, step by careful step, to the altar through a crowd of famous faces. There's George and Amal Clooney and Elton John, the Spice Girls.
Spice Girls, all of them?
No, just Posh, Ginger, and Baby Spice. Sporty and Scary are MIA. There's also a woman standing in the back corner on the groom's side. She's wearing a long, multicolored coat over an understated blue dress. Her hat is pulled low over her eyes. If you were watching the wedding on TV, then you definitely wouldn't have noticed her. But that unassuming woman might be the most important person here.
More important than the bride?
Even more important than Oprah. Her name is Sarah. Sarah Spencer. She's Diana's older sister. And without her, there wouldn't be a wedding. There wouldn't be a Harry. Because without Sarah, Diana never would have gotten together with Prince Charles. But before we get to that, I want to take you on a whirlwind tour of Diana's early years, starting on August 30th, 1961, the day of Diana's christening. It's a clear day at a country church. Her father, Johnny, wears a dark suit. Her mother, Frances, is dressed in baby blue with her hair tucked neatly into a church hat. She looks happy and a bit exhausted. Since giving birth, Frances has been traveling the country at her husband's request. She's visiting fertility doctors who've run test after test to figure out why she hasn't had a baby boy. The Spencers already have two daughters. They were desperate for a male heir. Instead, they got Diana. It's a modest christening, no royalty present, which is surprising since the Spencers are aristocrats through and through. They rose to prominence in the 15th century as the wealthiest sheep traders in Europe. They were so rich, in fact, they once bailed out the royal family. Many of Diana's ancestors were knights and ambassadors. When the christening is over, Diana's parents take her back to Park House, their country manor. The property has a tennis court, swimming pool, and cricket pitch, numerous garages, and a private stable. Park House sits on the edge of Sandringham, the Queen's country estate, and Diana's bedroom windows look out onto the Queen's backyard, which is basically a stretch of open fields. Sometimes she's even invited over for play dates. One day, when Diana is five, she's in the drawing room at Sandringham playing hide-and-seek with the Queen and her son, Prince Andrew. She's hiding behind a heavy silk curtain when in walks a big-eared teenager, Charles. "Everything all right?" he asks. "It looks like a good party to me." Diana's too shy to say anything, but she remembers the meeting for years to come. All in all, Diana's childhood is pretty much idyllic. Right up until it's not. Her parents' marriage is slowly crumbling. Diana's too young to understand, but it turns out Johnny and Frances want different things in life. Johnny's in line to inherit a giant country estate called Althorpe. It's a 100,000-square-foot mansion with 31 bedrooms set on 21 square miles of rolling farmland. It has one of the most impressive private art collections in the country, and all Johnny wants to do is prepare for his future life there as a country earl. But Diana's mother is young. She's only 28, 12 years younger than Johnny. She doesn't want to be cooped up in some stuffy old house bumping into heirlooms. She finds every excuse she can to sneak off to London. And on one of those visits, she meets a man. One affair later, Frances asks Johnny for a divorce. When Diana is 6 years old, she sits at the bottom of her house's staircase, watching her father carry her mother's suitcases to the car. Frances walks across the driveway, gets in the driver's seat, and disappears down the lane. For weeks to come, Diana will sit on those steps waiting for her mom to come back. But she never does. Instead, Diana and her siblings are now Johnny's responsibility. But he's a dude and isn't quite sure what to do, so he entrusts the care of his children to a series of nannies. And some of them aren't very nice. One sneaks laxatives into the kids' food. Another whacks Diana on the head with a wooden spoon whenever she causes trouble.
What the hell? This is starting to sound like the beginning of Cinderella.
Yeah, it was grim. Meanwhile, the man she's destined to marry, Prince Charles, who is 12 years older than Diana, is having the time of his life. He meets a woman, Camilla Shand. She comes up to him at a polo match and says,
"You know, sir, my great-grandmother was the mistress of your great-great-grandfather. So, how about it?"
She's just his type. A woman who's as comfortable clomping through the muddy English countryside as she is twirling at a fancy ball. And he takes her up on her offer. Before long, they're holed up in his suite at Buckingham Palace, embarking on a vigorous course in sexual education. Camilla thinks Charles needs to loosen up. Her advice?
"Pretend I'm a rocking horse."
But things between them don't last. He tells Camilla he loves her, but apparently he can't get up the courage to propose. Plus, his family wouldn't approve because she has, quote, a history. So she ends up marrying someone else. Charles is back on the market. And a few years later, his eye settles on Sarah Spencer, Diana's older sister. At this point, he's the most eligible bachelor in the world and can pretty much have anyone he wants. But that doesn't intimidate Sarah. She invites Charles to a shooting weekend at Althorpe. And guess who else is going to be there?
Well, We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10, to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable yes. meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
It's November 1977, and Diana Spencer is 16 years old. She's home from boarding school, standing in a field, dressed in corduroy pants, a borrowed raincoat, and mud-splotched wellies when she's introduced to her sister's new boyfriend, Prince Charles. She doesn't say anything, because what's she supposed to say? He's a prince, she's a kid. As one acquaintance describes her, she was a rather larger girl who wore terrifying Laura Ashley maternity dresses. She was very shy, blushed easily, and was very much the younger sister. Terribly unsophisticated. She wasn't anything to look at.
Wow, that is so rude.
Yeah, but Diana saw herself that way too. Not Charles, though. There's something about this shy, blushing, poorly dressed girl that catches his eye. After dinner, he asks her to show him around Althorpe's picture gallery. Diana later confides in her friends, "I remember being a fat, pudgy, no makeup, unsmart lady. But I made a lot of noise, and he liked that."
Yeah, who doesn't love a girl who isn't afraid to make noise?
Yeah, I think what appealed to Charles was that she wasn't stiff and shy like other people were in front of a prince. She was just herself, a goofy, silly 16-year-old girl. Back at school, she brags about Charles to her music teacher. "I've met him. I've met him at last." A year goes by. Sarah and Charles break up after she says some not-so-flattering things about him in the press. But I guess he wants to be the bigger person because he invites her to his 30th birthday party at Buckingham Palace. If she's thinking it's a chance for them to get back together, those hopes are dashed when she finds out she's not the only single woman Charles invited. Also on the guest list, Diana. Diana is thrilled, but suddenly shy again. She spends the whole party standing in the upstairs gallery looking down on Charles as he dances the night away with one beautiful woman after another.
Wait, she doesn't dance with him?
Nope. She doesn't think she's worthy. Charles is the most eligible bachelor in the country, maybe even the world. He's surrounded by vivacious, important women. Diana doesn't think she can compete with that. All she ever did was win an award for best kept guinea pig.
Wait, is that a real award?
Yeah, at West Heath Girls School it is. Though the school wasn't exactly known for its academic rigor. To get in, all you had to do was show that you had, and I'm quoting here, neat handwriting.
Wow, I would have been a shoo-in.
Yeah, you really would have. After Charles' birthday party, Diana goes back to school to take her final exams. She fails. Twice. So her parents pull her out of West Heath and ship her off to finishing school in Switzerland.
There, she learns the essential life skills, like how to lay out the silverware if you're ever giving a dinner party in France, or what to do if you're in Germany and need to blow your nose.
Those are some serious emergencies you could find yourself in.
Yeah, you gotta learn to deal with that.
I mean, can you imagine not being able to blow your nose in Germany? You'd look like an idiot.
I couldn't even possibly imagine. So when she gets back to England, her parents are proud enough of her accomplishments that they help her buy a fashionable London apartment. Diana invites three friends to move in with her. They call her the chief chick. It's a happy time. She dances, laughs, practices her cooking, which consists of two recipes, one for chocolate cake and one for borscht.
Wow, that's two more recipes than I have in my repertoire.
Yeah, seriously. She also works a series of odd jobs. Nanny, kindergarten helper, char lady.
A char what now?
It's a British term for a part-time house cleaner. Picture Diana in the winter of 1979, down on her hands and knees scrubbing the kitchen floor. She does this job for £1 an hour. She looks up at her employer and says, "Actually, you know what? We should try the dialogue together, right?"
Yeah, no, definitely. Who do you want to be?
I'll be Beryl. Beryl, the employer. You be Diana.
Okay, here we go. Guess what? I'm going on a shooting weekend to Sandringham.
Gosh, perhaps you're going to be the next Queen of England.
Oh, Beryl, I doubt it. Can you see me swanning around in kid gloves and a ball gown?
Yes. Yes, I can, Beryl. I can see it.
Wait, you're Beryl.
Oh, sorry. I get very excited.
Yeah, it's these British accents.
Yeah, which our listeners love. Anyway, Diana may be bashful when she tells Beryl about the invite, but deep down, she's positively thrilled. According to one of her friends, Diana said she felt like she'd been invited to heaven. A weekend with the royals is like the high watermark of the posh social circuit. And when Diana arrives, she makes the most of it. She spends the weekend shooting pheasants, stealing glances at Charles, and telling anyone who will listen that this is the life for her. For the first time, she dares to think that maybe, just maybe, she could be part of this world. But while Diana was dreaming of a happily ever after with Charles, he had his mind on someone else. A few months later, Charles attends a ball at Cirencester Polo Club, and he bumps into his old flame, Camilla Parker Bowles, formerly Camilla Rocking Horse Shand. He asks her to dance, and before long, they're twirling and laughing and making out for all the world to see, including Camilla's husband.
Oh, God.
Yeah. At one point, he turns to another partygoer and says, "His Royal Highness is very fond of my wife, and she appears to be very fond of him."
The British are so polite.
Yeah. News of Charles and Camilla's public canoodle eventually reaches the Queen, and she is, well, displeased. Her uncle, Edward VIII, fell in love with a married woman, and it cost him his crown. She's not about to let her son and heir make the same mistake. She thinks the time has come for Charles to find a wife, someone who has the right pedigree and a clean dating history. Oh, and she has to be Virgo Intacta, a nice Latin phrase that means she has to be a virgin.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So before long, the royals settle on the perfect candidate. Charles' grandmother invites him to lunch to break the news. "Do not," she says, "miss the chance of Diana Spencer." The next thing Diana knows, she gets a surprise invitation. A boy named Philip de Pass invites her to a house party. His offer is this: "Come and stay for a few nights. We've got the Prince of Wales staying. You're young blood. You might amuse him." On the first night, there's a barbecue, and Diana manages to grab a seat beside Charles on a hay bale. She turns to him and says, "You looked so sad when you walked up the aisle at Lord Mountbatten's funeral. It was the most tragic thing I've ever seen. My heart bled for you when I watched. It's wrong that you're lonely. You should be with someone to look after you." And with that, Charles jumps on her and gives her a big old kiss. Next, he's like, "Come on, babe. Let's hop in my Aston and drive back to Buckingham Palace together." But Diana turns him down. She says she doesn't know how to cope with his affectionate outburst. But then, finally, Charles makes her an offer she can't refuse. He invites her to join him on Britannia, the royal yacht, for a summer regatta. Now, Britannia does not belong to Charles, it belongs to his mother, and she keeps a close eye on it. So she's all too pleased when she sees that Charles has added a new name to the manifest: Diana Spencer.
Ooh, it's all coming together.
But little does Diana know that dating a royal is not all it's cracked up to be.
Don't you dare leave it there.
Watch me.
This is episode 2 of our 4-part series, Diana to Meghan.
We use many sources when researching our stories, like Vanity Fair, Tatler, and Town & Country. And yes, a few tabloids. But we especially recommend a few books. The Diana Chronicles by Tina Brown, The Queen and Di by Ingrid Seward, and Diana, Her True Story by Andrew Morton. I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams. This episode was written and produced by Kayla Bissinger. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our audio engineers are Danny Carissimi and Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt and James Morgan. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Marsha Louis, and Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.